You're now listening to Sound Talent Media. Check out more shows at soundtalentmedia.com.
Welcome to a new episode of Delirious Nomads, brought to you by Blacklight Media Records, a weekly podcast hosted by yours truly, celebrity chef Chris Santos. I hate calling myself that. And underground metal connoisseur Matt Bacon, who loves being called that. This is your new favorite podcast for all things heavy metal, as well as breakdowns of your favorite combat sports and riffing on some food talk every week with very special guests from across the globe.
Hey, what's up? We're here for another amazing edition of Delirious Nomads with the amazing John Tempesta this week. Good buddy of mine. We're just going to let him do all the talking because I could just listen to this guy talk all day long. He's as smart as he is as funny. He's a halfway decent drummer, and you might know him from The Cult or White Zombie or Exodus or Testament or Helmet or any other number of bands he's been in, which we're going to talk about. You get around, man. You are a whore of a drummer.
I am. Dude, it's good to be here, by the way, guys.
Yeah, man, thank you so much for being here. We really appreciate it.
My pleasure. Hey, let me start with this, okay? Because my dad's from Italy, right? So with the big Italian accent, I'll start off this. I'll go, okay, so you went in the Exodus, and then you went into the Testament. What's the next band? The Ten Commandments?
Oh, my God, that's fucking hysterical.
That's...
Biblical bands, baby. Who is next?
Gotta love the gotta love the strong Italian fathers.
Yeah, amen.
We've been threatening to hang out and shoot pool at my house and have a day for like 3 months, and this is the closest we get to actually doing it.
Soon enough, man. We have a long summer ahead of us, don't we?
Yes, we do. We do. So let's start with that. What does your summer look like? When are you going back out on tour?
Looks like October. We have some dates already. We have a handful of dates, the makeup dates that we couldn't do in fucking 2020, right? 2020. Yeah. I don't even know what year it is right now. So like San Diego and Albuquerque, probably Vegas, and they're going to add dates around that. So yeah, we'll just see how it goes. You know, I'm excited though.
Sure. I mean, we talk about this on this podcast a lot. It's going to be really amazing to see what's going to happen because everybody's going to go on the road, everybody. And there's just not going to be enough dates for everybody. So it's going to be
exactly right. So I'm like, you know, sitting back and watch what happens. That's going to be the thing. I mean, isn't the Foo Fighters playing the Garden next week? So that's like
with
Queens of the Stone Age.
Yeah. Oh, really? I didn't know that, man. Cool.
And it sold out instantly, like every seat. And they expanded the Garden from 16,000 to 20,000. And wow. It's completely out.
Man, that's my place, man. My first concert ever was Bowie in 77 at the Garden.
Oh, wow. Oh, you're going to love my house then. As soon as I got this really amazing Bowie thing, as soon as you walk into my house, you're going to love it. But anyway.
Okay.
Because you've gone on to play the Garden, right, John?
Never. Oh, okay. I played every fucking arena except the Garden. That's my dream to play the Garden because it's, you know, the Union thing is really expensive. We were supposed to play there with Pantera back in 95, 96, the War Gargantua's, but it's just, you know, you have to really, it's like one of those things you have to sell it out to make enough money to profit. Just to get in the door of the Garden is a lot of money, right? So yeah, we did play National Coliseum in the Meadowlands at the time. Brendan Byrne Arena was back then, right? But still, Garden, that was it. I mean, it was Bowie first. My second concert was Van Halen, opened up for Sabbath in 78. And nobody knew who Van Halen was. And they fucking smoked Sabbath up the stage. And we're the biggest Sabbath fans. It's like, who the fuck is this band? Honestly, I've never seen a band do that. Pantera had a bit of that, though. When you seen Pantera play, opening for, you know, they were just ferocious, man. They were scary, you know?
It's insane you saw that Van Halen Sabbath tour because that's like the tour I'm historically the most obsessed with. Like that must have been insane.
Never Say Die tour, yeah.
Because like Never Say Die is also like a weirdly great Sabbath album.
I like that record a lot, man. It's a dark record. Yeah,
I'm reading Running with the Devil right now. One of the Van Halen biographies, and I actually just read the chapters. I just finished more or less. Is when they're out on the road with Sabbath and they're talking about how they're blowing them off the stage every night.
Oh yeah. Even Sabbath says, I mean, but not even the States, they toured in Europe with them too. Like, you know, you know, fucking Hammersmith, Odeon and all that stuff. So they became really good friends. I know until the end, like Iommi and Eddie Van Halen were very close. So.
What was it like to see something like that? Like, because it was, I think people forget how revolutionary Van Halen were. What was it like as like a kid who was into Black Sabbath and Bowie to see Eddie Van Halen like destroy your brain like that?
Unbelievable. Well, first of all, it's me and my two friends, my bass, Brian Cody and Walter Garza, the guys I jam with. We were 15 years old at the time. And going to the Garden, and you see first of all, is Alex Van Halen's drum setup, right? I see these, I never seen this before. He had two bass drums put together, right? And he had a gas mask. You've seen the Silver Sparkle kit. Then you had the stacks of Marshalls. And the seats we had back at the time were in Lowe's at the Garden, right? And that's where the lighting guy would sit up on the top in Lowe's. And it was Pete Angelus who became their manager, right? And we're kids, like, who is this band? He goes, oh, it's Van Halen. They're from California. We had no idea. I'm like, hey, man, we're smoking weed. Like, when they puff, they go, no, I'm cool. I go, so tell us about this band. He goes, just watch, guys, just watch. And as soon as they went on stage, they opened up with On Fire. And like David Lee Roth jumped off the Marshalls, like doing this fucking kick and everything. And Eddie Van Halen did his solo, but he did like, he didn't really show the crowd. He did it towards his back, And the one time he had his Les Paul during an eruption as well. I would tell Zach Wild this story. He goes, you fucking seen that? Because I know he played a Les Paul. There's the only time he really played it live was that tour. Pretty fucking cool.
How did you get started? Like when did you start? I mean, I know a lot of your adult life, but I don't know how you actually started. When did you first get behind a kit? Why? I know your brother's also, a great player, Mike. How'd that come about?
My next door neighbor, my older brothers are very influenced. Like, we all grew up in the 70s. They're older than me. And my next door neighbor, Charlie Castelluccio, who became an NYPD detective later on, he had a Blue Sparkle kit, right? My mom would always buy me those cheap, like, kits for Christmas, and I'd break them in an hour, right? So Charlie had a proper kit. So he was moving on to from Blue Sparkle to Gold Sparkle kit. So he goes, hey, Mimi, my mom, I'll sell Johnny the kit for $25. I'm like, and I begged my mom, please, please, please. So, got the kit right over the porch right there, just poured the kit over right into the basement of the house. And honestly, that was it for me. I set him up in the basement. I was polishing him. I was putting like jewelry on the kit. And then I started listening to records and just started playing along with everything. And I was Charlie was a big influence to me. I mean, besides playing drums, he became a singer. He was like that Jagger guy, He looked like Jack, sounded like him. And I always looked up to him, and he took me to my first concert, which was Bowie. He goes, I had an extra ticket. They asked my mom, can I take Johnny to the concert? And we took the fucking 6th train to the Garden. And that was it for me, man. I mean, and we had shitty tickets, but the tickets weren't that shitty because it was side stage of the, Dennis Davis watching play drums. And I had a view, and I still have this vision of him, And that was it. Madison Square Garden, that was it for me. Yeah.
It's just insane to get to like see peak Bowie at 13.
I remember going to school the next day. These kids were like, what is that? I had like a pin and everything, way above it. Like, you know who this guy is? Like back then it was like, 1977. So who knows? Sean Cassidy and shit like that, maybe.
Were you and your brother like playing music together, or were you doing your own separate thing?
No, Mike's picked up the guitar years later, but we always listened to music together. We shared a bedroom and blast music and have the turntable going on. And yeah, music was always there in the neighborhood. And you would love this, Chris, in the 70s, McClay Avenue, where I grew up in the Bronx, everybody had a muscle car, man.
Yeah.
You have a Chevelle right now, don't you?
Yeah.
You have a Chevelle? My next door neighbor, I remember in 1969, I was probably, 70, Sal, the neighbor, it was a brand new fucking Dodge Charger in purple. Remember when they came out? And my next door neighbor had the Dodge Challenger, Michael Gagliardi, and it has a 318 engine in it, The guy almost killed me on the Hutch driving 120 miles an hour, and then John Brady had a GTO on Nova. It was amazing, and everybody hung out, played stickball, listened to music. It was great back then, man. Honestly, it's the best times of my life, Can't do that anymore.
It's fun that you'd say that that's the best times of your life because you've gone on to do so many great things with so many great bands. You know what I mean? That's great that you have such great memories of your, just growing up and stuff. What was your first big break?
Well, working for Charlie, I was a drum tech for Anthrax, right? We, No one from the neighborhood.
You were the knot man running around in a fucking mascot mask, weren't you?
That was hysterical, man. They had this big head. I just put it on. I became the knot man. I just turned to this character. It was hysterical. I just had everybody laughing, and I did my little moves, you know, back then. It was a lot of fun. I honestly, and that was a big break for me. And, you know, I was talking to Charlie about this. He was just in town with Carla. We were talking like how we met, like probably 17 years old, 18 years old, at this little bar, A Man's Castle, it's called. And Scott Ian loved that fucking name, A Man's Castle. So anyhow, it's this bar on East Tremont Avenue, and a mutual friend, Mike Nicolari, introduced us. And we just had so much in common. Like, you know, at the time, you know, new wave of British heavy metal and the band UK and progressive rock. And we just hit it off, man. And that was it. And then, and Charlie, like, he was ahead of me, like, in high school. He already left. But he'd just be playing his guitar at his house, right? And I would go there after school. I'd jam with him. He had the Rick fucking Cheap Trick guitar with the checkerboard thing. And
yeah,
I played on his big kid. He had this giant kid. We played Motorhead songs, Iron Maiden songs. It was a blast. And then Frankie Bello, we were in the high school band together, man. So that's basically, like, working for Anthrax, you know, being a tech. And I really enjoyed doing that. You know, I was in a band before that and it didn't, you know, pan out. The singer went on to join that band TNT, Tony Hornell. So singer. Yeah. So at that time I was like, God, I want to, you know, want to play. Right. Nothing was happening. And Charlie, it was almost like a joke thing. Hey, why don't you come on tour with us, man? It'll be fun. Because, you know, he knew I knew so much about drums and I would geek out and, like, you'd be perfect. And, I'm like, fuck yeah, man. Like, it was 2 weeks in Europe opening for Metallica. Like, when Jason Newsted, you know, got in the band, that was like, you know, after Cliff had died. And, like, going and doing that, I was like, this is amazing. First of all, I'm out of my parents' house, right? I'm fucking hanging out with my friends. I'm touring the world. I'm getting paid. I'm having a blast. This is the best thing in the world, right? And then after that, I was like, this is fun. Charlie goes, come to Japan with us, like, the following month. I'm like, and that was it. And I was there for about 3 years. But from there, Exodus opened up and Testament opened up for Anthrax. And they see me sound check. So at two different occasions, like, Tom Hunting couldn't do the tour for, you know, his reasons. And they had asked me, I'm like, but I never played that kind of music before. I was just a hard rock, you know, heavy metal guy, but thrash music, especially, like, fucking Exodus and shit,
right?
It was a challenge. And I asked Charlie, I was like, you should do it, man. So I, you know, I practiced a lot on the days off and, you know, in the hotels and just really honed in. I would watch, like, Perry Strickland from Violence came and filled in at that point. It was the Headbangers Ball Tour back in 88, was it? Yeah.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I just watched and learned and just listened. It was a challenge. And the first show was already booked at fucking Lemoore's in Brooklyn, like the hometown show. Talk about stress, like, my first show, right? And we didn't go on until, like, 1 a.m, too, man. Like, talk about a long day, right? I'll never forget. Billy Milano was like, just relax. Just take a deep breath. You're going to be fine. You're going to be fine. Hilarious. And so from that, so Exodus, you know, being Charlie's tech, working, and they see me play. And then, and after Exodus was Testament. They also, I know the guys from, you know, touring as well, opening up and good friends. And from there, and then doing the Testament Low record, and I had a call for about White Zombie, like, looking for a drummer. And I lived in L.A., and White Zombie was in L.A. at the time. But I would commute back and forth to the Bay Area for Testament at the time. Like, you know, my girlfriend was there. I was like, oh, man, it would be nice to be home. And I knew Zombie, that they there was something special about my, I kind of, this band's going to blow up. And I took that chance, you know. I'm not screwing anybody. I just, like, I just felt in, you know, in my heart, it was something, the right thing to do. You know what I mean? So
you did two records with them or three?
With who? White Zombie?
White Zombie, yeah.
The one record, Astro Creep 2000.
Oh, okay, yeah. The big one.
We toured, yeah. And, yeah, you know, there was, like, remix records that came out after that and stuff. But, yeah, right. That was a fun. That, so that was, like, the big, like, you know, arena tour and stuff, headlining and all with Zombie with the pyro. It's like being Kiss, basically. So that was a fun time in my life, yeah. And Rob and I are, you know, still friends, and it's great, man. I sent them a thing on the news, KTLA, the other day in the morning. you know, I'm up at like fucking 6 o'clock in the morning every day. And there's like zombie, they're talking about zombie on the news, like he's going to direct the Munsters movie, right? So I sent it to Rob, like, oh, check this out. And he actually posted on his Instagram the other day, which is kind of funny.
He's doing a Munsters movie? I didn't know that.
That's
funny. I want to do it for a long time, yeah.
I'm very excited to see that.
Well, yeah, we actually had the Munsters coach in the Rob Zombie video, Dracula.
Yeah.
Right? We actually wanted the Dracula, but it was in a convention in Japan at the time. The coffin, that's the actual Dracula. So, you know, yeah, it wasn't available. So Chuck Barris, who built all those cars, he had the coach. He brought it down to the video shoot. That was a blast, man. Just nice. Seeing the freaking Munsters coach, you know? It's fun.
Very nice. And then you had, I know that you play with Paige off and on in Helmet.
Yes.
That was next? If I'm
Well, no, after White Zombie, the band broke up, but Rob wanted to take a little break. Like, he goes, I'm going to do my own thing. And he brought me aboard to Rob Zombie, which is cool, you know? So it's like the new guy, but like, let's bring the new guy over. And I did a couple of records with him. And tours, it was great, a lot of fun. And then for that, that's when Rob decided to take a break and like he wanted to direct movies and all that. So I'm like, I can't sit around and wait around. So that's when I met Paige. Like he just moved to LA from our mutual friend Renee Mata. He goes, hey, Paige is in LA. I'm like, I was a big Helmet fan, but I was like, fucking Helmet? Kind of intimidating in a way, you know, because I remember Helmet being these monster guys, these tall, like fucking basketball player dudes with baseball hats, right? And so he put me in contact with Paige. We had met at the Cat and Fiddle in LA and we just like shot the shit. And that was it, you know? We just talking a couple shots later and like, hey, I have a drum room, bring your amp down. He brought his amp down and that was it, right? Automatically, it was like, we just clicked. And we were like best friends to this day. Where I live right now, in this house, Paige used to live right next door. That's the reason I moved here, Jim.
Yeah. I remember the three of us had quite a night out in LA once.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. People didn't say hi to you, by the way.
Cool. Yeah. One of those, put me and you together, and the next day was always really rough.
I know, dude. Yeah. I'm going to my fast tomorrow. I'm taking a week off, so yeah.
And then, of course, now you've been the drummer of the Cult for a long time, right? How many 15 years now?
15 years.
The Cult's amazing. I mean, I've loved the Cult from the very first record. But it's quite a departure from all the other bands we just talked about. So how did that come about?
I always loved the Cult. It's funny, like when the Love record came out, I remember going to Bleecker Bob's and buying a shirt and like wearing a Love shirt and going to see the Electric tour at the Felt Forum. And then it was like Madison Square Garden. That's where they used to have the boxing matches. Remember at the Garden, the Felt Forum back then, and the Cult played there. And it was me and Charlie went to that show. And years later, I met Billy Duffy, when Anthrax was it opened up for Kiss in 88, and Charlie introduced me and heard they were looking for a drummer at the time. I forget what happened at that point, but I was in Testament. I was in LA and my friend Ron Lafitte, who was managing Megadeth, he was managing the Cult at the time. He goes, Johnny, they're looking for a drummer. I think he'd be perfect. You know, at the time it was like the grunge era with the flannel, with the long hair, blah, blah, blah. And like, just my style of music. Cause that's like, I'm more of that style, like heavy metal, you know, hard rock. And so I was really pumped up for it. He sent me a demo that Rick Rubin had just done called The Witch. I'm like, this is cool, man. So, and you know, I was pumped up for this. I'm like, listen, I love Electric. And I really felt like, okay, there's an audition at Third Encore Studios. I was crashing my friend's couch. I didn't have any money at the time. And I didn't even have a car. He drove me. It was a fuck, you know, LA, like in the valley. In summertime, it's like 100 million degrees and shit, you know, in his little shitty Honda. So he takes me to the audition. I'm like, hey, I'm here for the Cult. It's like, oh, they're not here. I'm like, what are you talking about out here? I was supposed to be here audition. And they never showed up. They were done dealing with drummers. So before fucking cell phones, my friend dropped me off. I'm like, oh, great. I'm walking in this fucking heat. I got to find a payphone, get a quarter so I could call Ron Lafitte. Like, what happened, man? Because I don't know. Those guys are like, you know, I don't know what happened. But you know what? I think about it now. Like, if that would have happened, maybe, you know, timing is everything, because that I got the White Zombie gig after that, right? So if I would have gotten the call gig, I wouldn't, you know, things work out for a reason, I guess. And 13 years later, I joined the call. So
then how did that happen 13 years later?
Mike Monterullo, as you know, you seen him last night, yeah. Right? Good friend. Yeah. Good old friend. He was saying that TKO, like with Tom Vitorino, the manager from the Cult, saying that they're auditioning drummers. Would you like to do? And at first I was like, fuck those guys. I know where they're going to go. But I was like, yeah, man. And like, you know, I love Helm and I love Paige, but it was kind of like, you know, the deal didn't go through. And like, obviously it's not about me leaving it, but I have to survive, right? Moving on to play and make a living. And so, you know, I say, all right, send me the DVD of the live thing they're doing. And that was it. So basically I went in there like really feeling confident. I had nothing to lose at that point. Right. So, and that's it. Sometimes it's just like anything, you know, confidence could take you a long way. And Chris, you're a boxer. I'm sure you know about that, right?
Yeah. I mean, confidence is half the battle, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah. 100%. I think that life is always going to present you with stressful situations and there's going to be like anxiety and fear. And
of course, but that's good though. You need that. You know what I mean? Like if you don't have that anxiety or like that nervous, if you don't have those butterflies and you know, before you go on stage, like give it up, man.
Yep.
You know,
yep.
The excitement's gone. That's what I always do.
You got to use it, not let it use you.
Exactly. Right.
So now the next big topic of conversation is what the fuck have you been doing for 18 months when you couldn't go out and tour or you know, how did you spend your pandemic? It's funny. So this is the first time I'm referring the prior podcast, we were still kind of in the pandemic. Now I'm asking, what did you do in the pandemic? Because it seems
I know, like, it's great. Like everyone was doing the, you know, the quarantine jams and stuff. I did a couple of those, which was great. Charlie just met. He just took over on it. He was fucking the master of that. It was amazing. But right before the lockdown happened, I just finished recording the Motor Sister record, the new Motor Sister record at Dave Grohl's studio. And a friend of mine, her friend worked at the governor's office and she had given me a warning saying they're going to do a full lockdown. So, and everybody, I told everybody at the studio, I'm texting everyone. So everyone was like, well, we got to finish up. And it was like, it didn't happen for like another week. But you know, I finished my tracks up. I remember going to the market and just stocking up for like weeks, right? This is it. I was kind of, you know, all right, lockdown. Listen, I think in a lot of ways, and I hate to say it, it really sucked, but I think everybody kind of needed to chill out a bit too. I think there's a lot of good to it, a lot of bad, obviously, the whole pandemic, but I just, you know, in general, people became way more creative in their own ways, you know,
yeah,
and doing things on your own at home. It's homeschooling, you know, my brother, you know, my niece and everything, just everything, you know, but yeah. And then like the Cult, we actually take long breaks, you know. I've taken a year off for the Cult, so I'm kind of used to long breaks. So it's like, all right. But now it's a little too long. I'm ready to go back on tour at this point.
So you got the remake dates in October, but then are you going to go back out in 2022 or make a new record or what's the story?
Yeah, new record happening and stuff. They've been writing. So obviously like Billy was living during the whole pandemic, he was in the UK. He's back here now, but he's going back to the UK. And try to get this recording going. And then, you know, next year, if things open in Europe, that would be great, man. Doing the festivals out there. So let's hope.
Yeah, right. They seem on track, right, Matt? All the Euro festivals for next year?
Yeah, I think anything after May is fine. I definitely see the people. I see the people who have like the March, April festival sweating a little bit still and not sure if like they can bring in everyone for a one-off. Or I think the other issue is like all the tours have been moved.
Right.
Right. So it's like, it's hard if this tour was set up around a festival, it's hard to kind of not have that band on your festival.
How's it going to work with this whole, like,
I mean, fucking know. It's a mess.
No, we don't know. Like, honestly, you have a big festival and, you know, people like, you know, the honor system, who didn't get vaccinated with it, you know, and like, who knows? But there's such a liability, isn't it? Like for promoters.
Yeah, I'm going to two of Danny Wimmer's festivals. I'm going to Louder Than Life in September and Aftershock in October. And it's going to be a little bit strange.
It is, right?
Yeah. It's going to be a little bit strange. I don't know. You know what I mean? I don't know how you, I don't know.
Well, lose it, right? That's happening, isn't it?
Yeah.
That's a big thing.
Yeah.
Alcatraz in Belgium is happening August 13th, which I'm like, okay.
I've seen that. Knock on wood, everything goes well, right?
Are you not doing any of the festivals here, are you?
No. We're going to just do our, you know, the makeup shows right now and just go from there.
Nice. Are you doing LA or Vegas or New York?
San Diego right now.
San Diego? I'd like to come out.
Come on out, man. I think that's October 27th. It's a nice place, though, right on the water there. Yeah.
I love San Diego. It's gorgeous.
Yeah, spend the night, take the girl down, hang out for a couple days over there. You know?
Dude, I got a restaurant for you. It's a restaurant. It's basically my favorite restaurant in the United States. It's called Born and Raised. It's a steakhouse. It's in the Little Italy section, but it's not an Italian restaurant. But it's amazing. You should definitely go. In San Diego.
Oh, wow. In San Diego. Oh, okay. Yeah. Let's go, man. That'd be fun.
It's a great place.
All right, speaking of restaurants, you know, well, we know Chris Santos, the big chef guy over here. How many, you know, he's got like a gazillion restaurants. But let's talk about my cousin Alfredo Miccoli. He has Elmore in Brooklyn in Dumbo, okay? We're going to take
great.
It.
Great.
I know. He's been open for a long time, huh?
A long time, yeah.
How did he get through the pandemic? Because, you know, restaurants obviously in New York
at first he didn't do anything. He didn't do like the delivery or anything. So I'm like, you got to get your shit together, you know, because, you know, a lot of the cooks, everybody's just like, they didn't know what was happening. But then they were able to do the outdoor patio like everyone did. And, you know, it's like the locals that always go there. They like to, you know, contribute and help out. And the food's amazing. So they got him through this and he's doing better than ever right now.
I'm definitely going to make a note, Matt, when I'm in New York, the next time when you're in New York, we'll go there.
I really appreciate, John, all your like deep New York connections that you've been bringing up throughout this. It's kind of cool to see like, oh, okay. Like you lived in LA for like 25 years now or something.
Oh, longer than that. I've been in LA longer than New York.
But it's good to see that you're still like in love with a lot of the facets of this city.
Oh, it's my home, man. You know, as soon as I get off that airplane, you know, the energy in New York, there's nothing like in the world. And I travel all over the world, but there's nothing like going to New York City, man. Nothing.
Yeah, I agree.
The energy of the fucking city, man, the best ever.
Where do you think that energy comes from?
I just think the people are so diverse and just everybody does, you know what I mean? It's like, I mean, it's just New York. Maybe because it's so small in a way that, you know, it's people have to deal with each other. And, you know, there's so many factors of like music and, you know, film and food and it's just everything. Like architecture, you know, New York City, man. Nothing like it.
There's nothing like it.
Right?
Nothing like it.
And you're from Providence. You got some good fucking clams out there, though.
Oh, yeah. The best. And the best lobster rolls are Rhode Island style, I'm telling you.
Oh yeah, man. That's good stuff. I love it. Yeah.
Yeah. I love Providence. I gotta go back. I haven't been back since 2019 because of
what was the place in I remember the living room, was it?
The living room and Lupo's.
Lupo's both. Yeah, play those. Yeah.
The living room.
Great crowds, man. I worked
at both of those venues.
You did?
That's crazy. I didn't know that.
We probably met way back then, huh?
Yeah.
Think about that, man.
Wow. When I was, from the time I was 18 till the time I moved to New York at 23, I worked there and I worked at a place called Club Babyhead, which was a smaller, like maybe.
I remember that place?
What's that?
I remember that place. Yeah.
Yeah. So I don't know I don't know. It wouldn't have been you, I don't think. It was the early 90s, but I remember. I mean, that venue, I saw Nirvana at that venue. I saw, you know, working there. Nirvana came through, Pearl Jam came through, but it was Pearl Jam featuring members of Mother Love Bone. Like, no, Pearl Jam wasn't even Pearl Jam.
Wow.
Like, it was maybe 20 people showed up. I saw Pantera in front of about 50 people.
I don't think we played there, but I remember going there. It's almost like the 930 club kind of deal, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Right? That kind of vibe, right? Small.
Yeah. Some really great bands came through. Smashing Pumpkins, Jane's Addiction.
Oh, fucking man, what a great time for music, huh?
Yeah. I mean, those were my best times of my life. Those 4 years, just five nights a week. I was at that club, and five nights a week, there was a great band.
You got to see them all, dude. Magic.
You working on anything else you want to talk about other than cult stuff?
Yeah, well, besides that, I'm actually recording a song my brother wrote for Graham Bonnet, you know, Rainbow and Alcatraz and all that, yeah. On his new record. My brother wrote the song, and we're big, like, you know, we're friends of Graham, first of all. It actually started with Phil Demmel from Machine Head, you know, Phil.
Violet, yeah. You know?
And he always started me because I'm a big Cozy Powell fan, like, or Simon Phillips or Michael Schenker. And during the quarantine jam, he wanted to do Into the Arena, right, the song. I'm like, you know what? I have this song that it sounds like a song I wrote with my brother before. Why don't we do something like Assault Attack, you know, with Graham Bonnet? So I'm like, and I could ask Graham if he want to be a part of it. So I wound up getting him on this jam with my brother, Phil, and Joey Vera, and Joey mixed it, and it came out great. It was a lot of fun, man. So from there, you know, my brother wrote the song for his new record, and I played on it. And so we might do another song. So really exciting, man. Yeah.
Nice.
That's awesome.
I was a big fan of Human Waste Project that he was.
Oh, yeah, man. Yeah. They were badass. Yeah.
I'm to this day, I'm really, really, really tight with Amy Echo.
My brother loved you too, man. He fucking, yeah. He's like, when you said that Human Waste Project, you were, what? You know, it's great. Yeah.
I remember I was in Europe actually in, I think it was like 97 or 98, and I was in a record store. And they were playing it. And I was like, what the fuck is this? And I went up and I asked the guy. I was in France, actually. And I got the CD and I wore that CD out. I was in Europe for months and months. And I wore that CD completely out.
It's a great record, isn't it, man? I actually played it about a few weeks ago. Like, you know what? On my iTunes, like, just fucking lit. I was like, wow. Really cool experimental kind of stuff, you know?
Yeah, great, great, great songs. Mm-hmm. Especially the back end of the record, I feel like, is really... really, really good.
Yeah, yeah.
That song, One Night in Spain, is fucking awesome.
Oh, man. Yeah. And so besides that, well, like I was telling Mark, we're, you know, finishing up the tracks for the Motor Sister record, as you know. We came to your restaurant, Tracy Vera, you know, and Joey. And so all the overdubs are done. The mixing's done. Jay Rustin did an amazing job. So we're just going to master it right now. And we're just doing a photo shoot next week, maybe do some videos and... I'm really excited for people to hear this record. It's great, thanks, man. Yeah, it's a good energy.
So you're definitely keeping yourself busy.
Yeah, yeah, for the most part, yeah. Trying. Playing, you know, I do my routine, go to, you know, take my dog to the park every morning. I go to my studio and do all this, you know, it's fine. Life is good, man. You know what? God bless, you know. Everything is fine.
Absolutely.
I mean, do you have any idea what the next, you know, what's next? Is it beyond the cult, beyond working with your brother, beyond Motor Sister? Are there other things that you want to do? Or you?
I did do a record actually last October. I guess I could talk about it now. We're Rob Caggiano, you know, Volbeat, Anthrax.
Oh, yeah.
We have another project called Temple of the Black Moon. It's a very heavy project with Danny Phil from Cradle of Filth and King of Hell from Gogoroth. And there's something that we've done, like Rob used to be my old roommate in L.A. and we did this years ago, and like then they did a record. And never Rob wasn't there for production, so Rob was like, "We're gonna redo these tracks, and it's fucking heavy, man." And he brought me to New York in October. I flew on the day of my birthday, September 26th. Went to my cousin's restaurant that day, and we were locked up in Babylon, Long Island, to do this record at the studio, Dan Cornell Studio, Cornoff. I'm sorry, and honestly, he brought some shit out of me, man. Rob has an amazing ear and as a producer and everything. He killed me, this guy. But honestly, I haven't played like that since like Testament Low record.
So, really?
That's awesome.
Yeah, I'm excited. Yeah. He's like, you're going to kill me, you fuck. But I'm excited about it. It's like, I can't wait.
When are we going to be able to hear that?
I know. Ask Rob. Like, is he going to do his guitar tracks anytime soon?
Okay, got it. I can text him on the side.
Text him right now. Are you done with the tracks yet?
That's awesome. You're keeping yourself so busy, brother.
No, it's good, man. This is what we did, you know? It's, you know, I mean, who knows? There could be something around the corner. I do this jam thing that, which was fun, you know? But sometimes you pick, you know, what you want to play with and everything. I'm pretty content with my band, with the Cult, for 15 years. Mortar Sister, I love, and this whole project, and my brother jam with him. It's all good, man.
Love it.
Thank you, John, for spending some time. It's been good going all over the place.
Oh, that was a lot of fun, man. I'm so glad. Thanks for having me aboard, man.
It's just great hearing all the stuff. I'm so, you know, I mean, I love you as a human. You're a really good friend, but so happy for your success and all the shit you got going on. I mean,
appreciate that.
You work hard and you've earned all of it. It's fucking awesome. It's really awesome.
Thank you guys. And I want to see that Bowie post you have, whatever it is, at your house when you get out here.
Yeah, it's really cool. We're gonna get you to the house real soon, I promise.
Oh no, dude, I'm here all summer, baby. Okay.
All right. Well, listen, man, this has been another great episode of Delirious Nomads. It's one of my favorites because I love you, John, and you and that fucking Bronx accent. I could hear you I could just sit here and listen to you read the encyclopedia, and I'd be happy.
Hey, Johnny, over there. It's never going to go. It's like, I've been in LA longer than I've been in New York. It's like, it only takes me like 2 days to go to New York with my Guido brothers. And like, that's it. It's done. You know, this is a funny story really quick. My brother Vinny, when I lived in LA for a while, like when I first moved out, I came to New York. I'm like, hey, can I have some coffee? You know, coffee, you know, he looked at me with this disgusting look. He looked at me. He goes, what, you got a fucking flower in your throat? So there you go. I'll leave it at that.
Thank you, everyone, for listening.
All right, dude. Thanks so much, John. Appreciate you. I'll talk to you soon.
All right, so that was awesome. Thank you, everyone out there, for listening to Delirious Nomads, sponsored by Blacklight Media. We will be coming back at you next week with another awesome guest. Be sure to follow Blacklight Media on socials for new music and more, and above all, keep it heavy.
Hey, you. Did you have any plans this year? How's that going? Did you get 2020? Well, welcome to a brand new podcast called 2020, where myself, Benny Goodman, and my good friends, Corey Pazin and Siobhan Cronin from the band Lost Symphony also got 2020.
And since the world ended this year, we decided, why not just check in with some of our friends in the music industry and see how everyone's doing?
We're going to get a candid look at life on and off the stage, as well as the mindset of some of the most successful people in the entertainment industry.
New episodes drop every Sunday and Wednesday at 9 p.m. Eastern.
And you can listen at 2020-D.com, SoundTalentMedia.com, or on your favorite podcast app.
Hey, what's up? This is Blake Weiland. I'm the host of the Tone Mob Podcast. It's a show where I interview guitar people about guitar stuff. We talk about their pedals, their amps, their accessories, their preferences, all that stuff, as well as a healthy dose of whatever comes up. Topics have ranged from aliens to addiction and anywhere in between. Oh yeah, and pizza. We're definitely going to be talking about pizza. So get the show wherever you're listening to this podcast at. Just search The Tone Mob in your search bar and it will pop right up. Come join us. We're having a lot of fun. Thanks for checking it out.